Welcome to The Spartan Life, where we explore what it means to be part of the Southern Lehigh family.
And attempt to cover all of the sweet, sweet goodness that is Southern Lehigh High School in 30 minutes or less.
From first-hand coverage of exciting experiences, to intimate discussions with some of your favorite teachers.
To inspirational interviews with diverse students on unique journeys.
That's right, great students accomplishing great feats.
We'll do our best to hit all of the highlights.
But inevitably, we will fail. Because there's so much to celebrate, we're afraid your brains would simply melt if we tried to cover it all.
We are your hosts.
I'm Mr. Howe.
And I'm Mr. Castagna.
Join us as we venture into the heart of Southern Lehigh High School, one interaction at a time, on
The Spartan Life.
Here we are again on The Spartan Life. My guest today is Senior Jonah King. How you doing, Jonah?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. Hanging in there. We're doing this interview on a Thursday, and Thursday is kind of the new Friday, so I'm feeling pretty good. Now, it came to mind that for us to pursue a student for an interview on The Spartan Life, that student has to fulfill two requirements. First and foremost, they have to have an interesting story, and you certainly do. But secondly, that student also has to be well-spoken. And you certainly fit that requirement, as I've learned from public speaking class. And I learned it with our very first performance, I would say. It wasn't really a speech. I had the students perform karaoke. And I just want you to tell our listeners about the idea that you came up with and then explain to me where you got that idea.
Well, I was in my room and I was thinking what I should do for my performance. And I was going through a playlist of like classic rock songs, and I thought I was going to do Thunderstruck by AC/DC. But then I was made for loving you by Kiss came on. And I started looking at the music video, and there was Paul Stanley in his classic makeup with the star and his hair. And I just thought, that's what I want to do. So I put together not an outfit. I kind of cut out like a paper face. I was going to do makeup, but I thought that would be weird for my next class if I couldn't like get it off. And I got a wig, and I had a mannequin with me that was kind of my my helpful dancer and my dance mate, basically. I can't think of the word for it right now, but
you kind of love it.
Yeah, I kind of looked at it in like a loving way, like it was my soulmate, and I danced with it. And then I thought, in the middle of the performance, it wasn't planned. I just came to my mind. I thought, wouldn't it be hilarious if I just ripped the head off of the mannequin, tossed it to the side, and started using the stick that the mannequin was on as a microphone/guitar? And I thought, yeah, let's do that. So I grabbed it by the throat, ripped it off, chucked it to the side, and then I went on with my performance. And people were surprised, to say the least.
Oh, yeah. The other students lit up the chat. I mean, first off, they were like, wow, he's supposed to be quarantining. Who's this girl he's got with him? And they were joking around like, wow, love the homemade mask. And then you pull the head off the mannequin and started singing into the stick that was left. And they were like, oh, my God, he slaughtered her. What's going on? This got really dark. But it was just like fearless and fun. And I said, wow, this guy has no problem presenting in front of a group. Let me find out if he's got a good story. And it turns out that you do. So I wanted to start by talking about your experience with Civil Air Patrol. Now, we've talked with other students before on The Spartan Life about Civil Air Patrol, but so few people know exactly what it is that I think we'd all benefit if you just kind of described it for us a little bit.
Okay. So it's basically like JRRTC, but it's better. So Civil Air Patrol is the auxiliary of the Air Force, and it's basically a bunch of cadets ages 12 to 18. You can stay in as a cadet until you're 21, but if you choose to become like a senior member, you can make the switch at 18, but most cadets stay in until past their 18 and as long as they can, because being a cadet is just so much fun and it's very intriguing to me. So it's basically a program that teaches cadets leadership, aerospace, and aviation. And like, it just, we meet on Tuesday nights. It's different for every wing. It's nationwide. We all get to put on the uniform. We put on the Air Force battle uniform. And it's just that sense of pride that you get from wearing the uniform. It's just like, it's not like anything else. Just being able to put that on every week. And you represent not only Civil Air Patrol, but you're basically representing your country. And it's just, it's a very fulfilling program. You can join at age 12. It's, you can go on the website, gocivilairpatrol.com, to find out more information about it. You also get taught drill and ceremonies. So we get to learn like marching informations and stuff. And there's also boot camps, basically advanced, basic, like all different walks of life in inside Civil Air Patrol. So there's flight academies that you can get your private pilot's license through. You can go to PJOC, which is like, it's like basic training for cadets to learn how to become an Air Force pararescueman. And there's, everyone has to go through basic encampment first, which I went through. It's a week long course that's, it's based off of the Air Force's basic military training, very intense cadre, get up in your face, they yell at you. There's a lot of marching around. I never knew the time when I was there, which kind of drove me crazy because I like to be planned and like know what's happening when and like what's going to happen next. And it was challenging, but it was a very good experience for me.
Did you start at 12 years old?
No, I started when I was 15. I wish I would have known about it when I was 12 years old, because then I would probably be a lieutenant colonel by now. I am currently a cadet senior master sergeant, but I should be a cadet chief master sergeant, but they forgot about my promotion last Tuesday. So,
So next Tuesday, you'll get that
promotion? Yeah, next Tuesday, I will be a cadet chief master sergeant.
Oh, that's pretty exciting. I feel like I should be saluting you, sir. Nice job. No.
we have rules when it comes to saluting. We have to be in uniform. We have to salute outdoors. If you salute indoors, that's a no-no unless you're reporting to someone. And it's just like to salute outside of Civil Air Patrol, it's just kind of like a weird thing. It's like kind of a cringy, you know what I mean? It's just,
Well, I'm saluting you on the inside.
Thank you.
So clarify for us that you said there are all these different opportunities within Civil Air Patrol. I'm curious how many of them you've taken advantage of. First and foremost, do you fly planes?
Me personally, no. But once you join Civil Air Patrol as a cadet, you are automatically eligible for 5 orientational flights in a powered aircraft like a Cessna and 5 orientational flights in a glider pulled by a Cessna. And then they let you go. And then you basically just get to fly around. I have not done an orientational flight yet. I plan to. But there are other people that are more enthusiastic about flying than I am. So I let them have the slot. But yes, you can fly planes. You can get your private pilot's license through it. The programs that I've taken advantage of are, Hawk Mountain Ranger School, which I went to the basic winter course, and that was, it was intense. It was the 14th and 15th of February of 2020. So this, earlier this year, and it was cold. It was the coldest weekend we had had in a couple months, and it was brutal. We didn't go inside. We slept outside, we learned survival techniques, and the people that I was up there with, I kind of like bonded with them, same at basic encampment. And cadets around you, that you, when you're suffering with them and you're going through all this training with them, you start to like form like a brotherhood. And it's just very motivational to get you through that. My first day there, I wanted to go home. And, but I told myself like, nope, I can't quit. Like I'm already here. So there's no point now.
How long were you out on the mountain that weekend?
2 days.
So 2 straight days. You're out there the whole time. They bring food for you, or do you have to like, you know, eat berries?
We had to bring our own food. I survived off of go-go squeezes and those little power bars that are, they're not the Cliff bars. They're the like 2 almonds, 2 egg yolks. I don't remember what they're called.
Those are RX bars.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Where they give you like the list of the 4 ingredients that are in there. Yes. Yes. It always tastes terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. And I only had blueberries. So blueberry RX bars and go-go squeezes is what I survived off of for 2 days. So I would have been longer.
That's a ranger course, you said, right?
Hawk Mountain Ranger School. So yes, it is a ranger course. And when you go to, there's a summer course, a winter course, and then there's advanced courses like medical course, search and rescue. Oh, well, it's all centered around search and rescue.
What I wanted to know. When you say ranger course, like what exactly are they training you for?
Yeah, so rangers, if you get a high enough rating, you can go out on search and rescue missions to find like downed pilots. And cadets have participated in disaster relief missions before. I went on a coronavirus disaster relief. We basically boxed a bunch of food at a warehouse, but for Ranger School, yeah, you can go out and look for downed pilots in a, on a ground team. And it is, it's kind of scary to know that like you're, I've never done it, but I can imagine it's probably very scary to know that like, if you don't find someone, like their life is almost in your hands if you don't, if you're not able to locate that person.
Wow. Yeah. It's a heavy responsibility.
It is. Yes.
Now you said you went through boot camp.
Basic training. It was a week long and, we got there and the bus driver was really nice, but the second that the, cadet cadre got on, cadet cadre is like the staff members. They're kind of like drill sergeants, but they don't wear the brim hats like you see in the Marine Corps.
Yeah. The big Army. Brim going all the way on the leg, yeah. Like Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
Whoever exactly. The Ranger was in Yogi Bear. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first time the cadre stepped on the bus, we got yelled at like, all right, I don't remember his name. Oh, wait, no, it was my cadet executive officer. He said, my name is Cadet Second Lieutenant Parker. I am your cadet executive officer. Now get off my bus and grab your stuff. And from that point on, we fled off the bus and there was just like 20 cadre up in our faces and they were screaming at us to grab our bags. They said, I don't care whose bag you grab, just grab a bag and move to your barracks. And we moved to our racks, or which are beds, and it was a ride from there. Very intense for the first 3 or 4 days.
So let me ask you about these cadre. Is it like in the movies? Do they use the kinds of like creative profanity that we hear in the movies?
See, with Civil Air Patrol, it is a cadet program and we do have 12-year-olds around, so they are limited in what they can say, but yes, the cadre do say some pretty clever stuff and it yeah. Can
you don't have to give us any examples, but you know, anybody who's seen Full Metal Jacket or any of those other basic training movies, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And what was some of the stuff they had you do in basic training? Like how grueling was it physically?
Physically it wasn't too bad. We woke up at, I have no idea when, but we woke up at 0600, I believe, or 0545. And we basically just, did PT for about an hour or two. And then we went back to our barracks. We changed on our uniforms and then we went out to either classes or to training courses, like obstacle courses. And, it was really cool. We had a sergeant major from the Army come and speak. We had a major from the Air Force come and speak. We got to do, a leadership course and an obstacle course. A leadership course was where you had to like figure out how to get across a set of obstacles with props. Like you had to tie a barrel to a plank or with a rope and figure out how to get across a bridge. My team didn't do too great. We were very dysfunctional because everyone was trying to be a leader and no one wanted to be a follower. And it was rough, but it was overall a very fun experience. It wasn't too grueling, but it was definitely challenging.
Yeah, so more, I would say, strategy, more problem solving and working as a team is what it sounds
correct.
Like. Yeah, okay. So it sounds like a good experience.
It was.
When you say that Civil Air Patrol is the auxiliary to the Air Force, is that correct?
That is true.
What does that mean? Like, could there be a time when you would get called up to basically military service as a member of Civil Air Patrol?
You can't really get deployed as a cadet. I mean, I guess you could volunteer to go out on a search and rescue mission if you're Ranger qualified. But no, I don't believe they can deploy cadets. But one of the perks of Civil Air Patrol is if you reach the rank of cadet second lieutenant, you can enlist as an E3 in the Air Force.
Okay, so it's almost like a feeder program.
Yeah, yes. It, the whole program is meant to train you in like discipline and military bearing, military lifestyle, and basically prepare you for the military. You don't have to join the military, but that's a lot of cadets choose to pursue.
And you do have an interest in pursuing a career in the military, correct?
I do.
Tell us a little about that. Like, which branch of the military are you most interested in going into? How did you get involved in all this in the first place?
Okay, so first I grew up in California near Travis Air Force Base, and I always saw airmen in uniform walking around the grocery store or walking around on the street, and I saw them in uniform and I thought, man, those guys look awesome. Like, I want to do that. Like, I wonder what they do. And I saw like the amount of respect that they got, and I just thought, like, from a really young age, like, man, I want to do that as a career. Like, I want that to be me. So military service for me, I'm on the fence between Army and Air Force right now. So I'm planning to go into ROTC, which is the Reserves Officer Training Corps. It is a four-year program that you go through college and you basically learn about the values of the military and military training. And then once you are done with your four-year process, you commission as a second lieutenant into whichever ROTC program you went through, such as Air Force ROTC, Naval ROTC, Air Force ROTC, or I already said that, or just normal ROTC for the Army and et cetera.
Okay, so you were sort of inspired by the people you saw around Travis Air Force Base, which is where you grew up.
Correct.
Wow. See, that fascinates me because I don't know a lot of teenagers who would see that and say, like, wow, that's impressive. That's the kind of guy I want to be. But you did. And so you found Civil Air Patrol and now you want a career in the military. Is there a military tradition in your family?
Nope. There's no, none of my immediate family was in the military. My uncle was in the Navy. One of our good friends was in, he's a naval officer. We have, my great grandfather was in the Army. And we have a friend who's also in the Navy, but no, we don't have any really family that was in the military, like close family. But what I wanted to do was determined by not by what my family's traditions are, but by what my what I thought my duty was. So I was, I think I was laying in bed one night, and I thought, well, not one night, but a lot of the time, I think, man, like, there's brave men and women out there that are out there every day sacrificing their lives so that I can sleep peacefully in my bed. And I just thought, like, well, I'm medically and physically qualified for military service. So I don't see any, I mean, there's obviously other people that are joined in the military, but if I don't join, then that's one less person to go out and protect our nation to keep other people sleeping peacefully at night. And that's just, it just felt like I have to do it. It's not that I don't want to do it. I do want to do it, but I feel like it's just like my duty in order to go serve my country.
It's a really noble response to, you know, seeing men in uniform and immediately you feel like you owe a debt because you, you know, because you can be out there. It's very impressive, especially for a young man. I can kind of relate. When I was about 12, I saw the movie Point Break, and I watched Keanu Reeves play Johnny Utah, who is an FBI agent who goes undercover as a surfer to bust these men who are robbing banks wearing masks of the U.S. presidents. And I saw that, and I said, well, I want to be an FBI agent who goes undercover as a surfer to bust guys who are robbing banks wearing presidents' masks. And then I realized that doesn't exist. So fortunately for you, you saw something that actually exists and you're going to pursue that lifestyle, which is really inspiring. But that's not your only interest. You're also really into auto detailing. And when I talk to you about it, it's not like you're into it as a job. You almost believe in it like an art form. You're really passionate about it.
Yeah.
So how'd you get into that?
Well, I was, my dad is a member at our local car wash in Quakertown. And he basically went up to the manager and he goes, hey, my son's looking for a job. Like, can you fit him in? And he goes, yeah, sure. So he brought me in and I interviewed him. Like, he interviewed me and I got the job. I got hired on the spot. So I started the next Saturday and it was tough because we work outside all day and it was freezing cold because I got hired, I think, early December. But the longer I worked there, the more passionate I grew about cars and just like, when I got my own car and I saw how dirty it was, I decided like, you know, I cannot live like this. Like I need to clean this thing up. And once I started doing that and I started like detailing other cars, I just thought like, man, like this is awesome. Like this is like an art to me. Like this is truly important because everyone can benefit from a clean car. Like no one wants to get in your car if your car is like disgusting. And I think there's an extra added level of professionalism and skill in the detailing community because everyone has their own way of doing things, but the end product is just so beautiful to me. And it's just, it's incredible. And that skill that is required to make that product look like that is just very fascinating to me.
Did you have any auto detailing experience when you got hired for that job?
Nope.
So how did you learn it?
I learned from my coworkers. who are middle-aged Latinos from Salvador. And so it was kind of hard to understand them at first, but I started to learn a little bit of Spanish, and some of them spoke a little bit of English. So we started to like work something out, and they just started showing me stuff, and we just went from there. So, yeah.
Wow, who knew you could become bilingual from working auto detailing?
I'm not fluent by far. I barely know anything. I can only say a few words and phrases, but yeah.
Okay, but you're transitioning from working for an auto detailer to going into business for yourself. So it's not just the artistry of auto detailing. You're also an entrepreneur. What has that experience been like for a young guy with limited experience doing auto detailing? You got to come up with money to fund this business. What has it been like? What have some of the obstacles been?
Oh, okay. Well, I first started thinking to myself, we have a lot of strict rules at my work, at my job, and I don't think my bosses trust me enough with some cars. We get a lot of high-end cars at my job. We get BMWs, Lexuses, Audis, Porsche. I helped a little bit to work on a 1966 Ford Mustang GT yesterday. So that was a very, very cool experience.
Is that terrifying? Like, are you nervous the entire time that you're going to mess this thing up?
Extremely. When I get a very high-end car or a very old car, and it's like the customer's baby to them, it is, it's challenging and it's scary. And that's why my boss doesn't let me, he's very limited with what he lets me do. I thought I was more capable than what they thought that I was. So I decided to think, well, what could I do by myself? Like without their help, and on the experience that I've had so far, what can I do by myself with detailing? So I started practicing on my car, went pretty good. I started practicing on my mom's car. That went very good. So then I bought a bunch of equipment. I bought a pressure washer, bought a bunch of chemicals that I can't name because I lost track of them all. Bought a vacuum. I probably spent over $600 to $700 in detailing supplies for my side gig business. And I worked on my first customer car last Sunday. And so it went very well.
Officially in business for yourself.
That's correct.
And yep. It went well that first assignment?
It went great.
But what kind of car was it that you were detailing?
It was an old Ford. It was kind of like a square in the back, and it was like a deep red. It was an SUV, but I don't remember the model. But it was a large panel, large surface to work with. But yeah, it was a good experience.
So what do you make for one job like that, a big SUV? What do you charge?
Well, I think I've been charging a little too little because I charged 50 for the outside. I was only able to complete the outside because it started getting dark. But at my work, the average detail costs anywhere between $120 to
$230.
Wow. So I'm trying to go a little bit under that. So for exterior details, I was thinking of charging maybe 70 or 80 because of my work is about 120 for an exterior detail. And for interior details, around the same price, maybe like 60 or 70, because at my work, it's like another probably 115. So the kind of strategy that I've used is, since I'm obviously not a professional and I'm under 18, I look at my competitors and I see like, what are they charging? Okay, well, since they're professionals and I'm just starting out, I should charge like under them and then start working my way up.
So you decided you'd come in low and undercut your competition.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So you should recoup that initial $600 or $700 investment fairly quickly. And then it's just a question of like, you know, adding new supplies and new tools to your arsenal.
Correct.
And at the same time, picking up new gigs. So yeah, I don't know how much we want to advertise this because you're probably doing it off the books. But any of our listeners or viewers, Jonah King is the man to contact if your ride's looking a little dirty and you want it detailed so it'll be shiny and new.
Yes, sir.
All right. And if you guys want to contact him, you can contact the Spartan Life and we'll put you in contact with Jonah. Now, Jonah, you also moved here from California. Whereabouts in California are you from?
Okay, so I'm originally born in Vallejo, California. I was raised in Vacaville. It's kind of between like, so Napa's here, Fairfield is here, and then San Francisco is like way over here. Mm-hmm. Vacaville is somewhere right here.
Okay.
So it was a very small town, very hot, very dry. But it was fun. I made some pretty good friends, but when I was probably about 10, maybe 9 or 10, we moved to Southern California to a town called Ventura. It's about an hour or two away from LA. And that place was amazing. And it was always either 60 or 70 degrees. It was cloudy every morning. I lived 5-minute walk away from the beach. So I could take my surfboard and I could walk there every morning. I learned to surf. It was great.
Surfer.
Yeah.
Have you surfed on the East Coast at all since you've been here?
I tried it. The waves are more choppy out here, and the water is like stickier. But yeah, it was a while since I got on the board, but I did okay for my first time in like 5 years. So
let me clarify. So you moved from California directly to Center Valley, or were there any stops in between?
I think we decided one day, I don't know how we'd, my dad's job was, we had two choices to either go to Ohio or to come here. And since we have close family out here, we would come out here every Christmas, to see our grandparents, my grandparents. And we were just, we just knew we had family here. So my dad said, all right, let's move to Pennsylvania. And, we didn't really want to pay for flights, but at the same time, we also wanted to see what America looked like in between, like the flyover states. We got to see the Grand Canyon with snow covered all over it. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah. We got to see Route 66. That was we traveled through Route 66 most of the time. Well, what's left of it. I think most of it is like broken up. I could be wrong.
Call it old Route 66 now. Yeah. It's off the beaten path. It's hard to find.
Yeah. But we got to drive on Route 66 and we eventually made it up here. And we lived in my grandparents' house for about a year and a half when I was in seventh grade, about the ending year of seventh grade. And then in eighth grade, I started school at Southern Lehigh.
What are some of the big differences between growing up in California and then living here from about 12 or 13 years old on?
The first thing I noticed was the roads. The roads in California are so wide and they're so open and they're flat. And the ones here are just like jaggedy and it's a mess. But other than that, taxiing is a lot worse out there. It's definitely more humid here. It's more of a dry heat in California. If you step into the cold shower, like you still feel hot because it's just so humid outside. But what I like most about here in Pennsylvania is you get to experience all the seasons. In California, you just get to experience spring and summer. But even then, spring isn't really that interesting. But here, like the fall and the winter is beautiful. But after January 1st, I'm done with snow.
Yeah. I hear you, right? After the holidays, it's all less exciting and you're like, let's just move on to spring. Yeah, I hear you. Okay, so that about covers it. Civil Air Patrol, auto detailing, your history, coming of age in California. Fascinating story, sir. I thank you for joining us on The Spartan Life.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome, sir. Good luck in the auto detailing business.
Thank you very much.